Okay.
Cool. Good job.
I'm next.
Yes.
Steven!
It's that time of year again when your nice hosts take a few weeks off. The program will resume with new episodes in the first week of March or the end of February for Patreon supporters. But each week until then, your nice hosts will re-air one of our favorite episodes of 2025, along with a few new thoughts about each one. This week's nice replay is episode 399, Half Trash Compactor, Half Room, Composting Over Designing, originally published July 24th, 2025. I picked this one because it was fun to have Ellen back on the clubhouse with us, which is great. And also the accidental synergy between your and my topics, Lydia.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun that ended up happening.
Yeah. Oh, what were the two topics?
Composting and over designing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Lydia's was like you were introducing us to a formal definition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And contextualizing it within video games.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Steven, you were coming at it from a more like wide angle. A thing that had less of a stronger definition.
Right.
And they kind of met pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I will say, and Lydia, this is probably due to your influence, but we've had a lot of that this year.
That's true.
Cool.
Synergy.
Synergy. That's
I don't know if I'm doing it intentionally or not, but I'm super jazzed. I mean, I think it's really nice to be able to look at the same stuff from different angles, especially when it's something that is very much thinking about thinking, very metacognition type stuff. Like, why do we over-design? Why do we do these things?
Truly, we're a strange, confusing people.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, new episodes resume at the top of March. If you want to skip ahead 1 week to make the wait a bit shorter, you can do that and get all of our episodes ad-free, plus exclusive bonus audio that's pretty nice too, at patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
Ellen remains in the clubhouse for an additional week.
Yay!
Glad to still
have
you.
They kept me here for a week. They put me in the closet and they locked the door behind me. I had to sleep on the couch.
I had to find very flat food to slide under the door.
Very flat food.
Well, we made it
the
work.
The fortunate thing is, a lot of flat food is delicious.
True.
Yeah.
All in service of you, dear listener. but we so because we're a clubhouse of four today, we have a little bit of more nonsense to get through the top of the show. So dig in. Here we go.
True.
First thing, I just had a kind of a fun adventure this last week. Friend of the show, Joanna May, who we've had on the show before. She offered Dale and I a space to stay as our apartment was being renovated. And renovated is kind of a strong word. They actually just took out all our windows and replaced them with new windows.
Okay.
We have in our apartment.
Sounds good.
And so we couldn't stay there. Holes in the wall. So we spent like 4 or 5 days clearing out the entire apartment because the windows are like wall to wall in every room of the apartment.
Yeah.
And so we had to have everything moved 6 feet away, which is about like, you know, half or third of the room.
Yeah.
And so we just were piling up everything in our apartment in all the rooms and finding, so in the end, there was nowhere to sit, nowhere to sleep.
Dang.
Even though like, and so we did that before they came into, you know, it was all scheduled.
Right.
But because, you know, they were doing the floors above and the schedule drifted. And so the day before everything was all set to go, we're like, okay, let's go stay at Joanna's. And she was nice enough to host us. We're like, we'll be in here for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And they do the thing. So that day, they're like, oh, actually, no, sorry. We are going to delay it a day. And I'm like, okay, well, Joanna, can we stay for 3 days? She's like, sure, no problem.
Yeah.
So then we get there. And then we're just free day before they start.
Yeah.
And then the morning of, which was last Thursday, they said, oh, it's going to rain today. Like, everyone knew it was going to rain. It was in the forecast for like a week.
Oh.
And so they canceled the thing, and they're like, we're going to move it forward one more day.
Oh, no.
And that's fine, but then that becomes Friday and Monday.
Yeah.
Because they don't work on the weekends.
Right.
So, Joanna, could we stay the weekend?
Dang.
Gosh.
Yep. And so we ended up staying nearly a week with Joanna, who's very kind to host us. And that's it was like nice, a funny, fun little vacation with Val.
Did she also put you in a closet and slide you flat foods?
We stayed in the attic.
Whoa.
Yeah. When I was a kid, that's where I lived, was in the attic.
Yeah.
It gets hot.
She set up a window air conditioner and she turned it down to 66 on full blast.
Wow.
And ran it for a whole day before we got there.
Oh,
like
that's so sweet.
She prepared for us.
That's so much nicer than my parents.
She was a great host. Yeah. I made her watch Dark City.
What a fun little.
We played Mario Kart.
Summer party.
Yeah,
it was kind of a summer party.
That's
awesome.
That's cool. Yeah.
So I just wanted on record, like, thank you, Joanna, for hosting us. It was very, very nice. That's pretty much all I did last week. I kind of corralled my way into having a little bit of a lighter work schedule.
Yeah.
So it was just, it worked out.
Cool.
You deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you deserve a break.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, wait, are you back in your apartment now?
As of today, yes.
How are the windows?
Pretty good. they're coming in tomorrow or maybe the day after to do what's called a spot check.
Oh, okay.
And I've noticed a couple of little problems. Mm. And I wouldn't mind so much, except we live in a condo, and so our building management, you know, hired the company. Like, this isn't our renovation. It's buildings, you know, 40 years old. It was time to replace all the windows.
Sure.
But we had to take out a loan for it. Like, we're paying a lot of money to make this happen, and we didn't have a choice in the matter.
Yeah.
It was what had to be done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not mad or anything. Yeah. And so I'm like, I think I have the right to complain a little bit.
Yeah.
When, like, you know, they added a little panel here and it's crooked by 5
minutes. Oh, yeah.
That's,
if I was renting and they were doing the building, then, like, I would have no standing. But I'm like, I paid for this. So, you know, we'll see.
And you were, you know, kicked out of your place for like a week.
Yeah, that's just. I mean, we had a good situation. We got to, you know,
sure.
Joanna would let us. She would. We could. We'd still be there. She wouldn't mind.
Mm. Yeah, you don't need to tell him that.
But exactly. I mean, it's kind of strange because, you know, we have, like, we were thinking, like, oh, maybe we'll get a hotel room in the city. I've never vacationed in Minneapolis before. Mm. Might be kind of fun. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we didn't think to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Would have been a total waste. You know, because you got to book that stuff. Yeah, they just were really bad with the scheduling, and we are. There are 23 floors in our building. We're on 19, and so they started at the top and are going down. And the schedule slipped already by over a month.
Jeez.
By the time they got to us. Like, I don't know. I hope they get better at planning this.
Yeah.
So that the people on the fifth and fourth floors, by the time it gets to them, they're not having the same trouble.
Yeah,
and also, so that way they have windows when it gets cold out.
Right.
Good point of that. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah, my, it's a big project.
Prediction is that won't get better.
Yeah. I think Ellen is right.
I think that's a safe bet.
Yeah. But we took all the stuff off the bed.
Yeah, okay.
But we still have to put everything back where it was.
Right.
Which probably, I think we're going to, like, give it a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You're in the place now, so you can take it.
We're going to live in an apartment that is half trash compactor, half empty. Like, and, like, that's not going to be that bad.
Yeah.
It's just going to be how it is for a little bit as we recover.
That's good.
Yeah, I hear recent celebrations in order.
It was my birthday recently. I'm not going to say when.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's
happy birthday.
It's none of y'all's business when my birthday is, but.
recently is all you get.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Steven has a personal life.
Yeah.
Just want to say, I know now, and I am accepting bribes.
Right. Actually, if Ellen
nice
benefits.
Nicegames.club/Discord.
Yeah. If Ellen benefits from this is great. on my birthday, what I used to do is I used to watch Pixar movies on my birthday because I love Pixar movies.
And there was one every year.
Mm-hmm, and there's one every year. And so I decided to bring that tradition back, and I went and watched the new Pixar movie, Elio.
How was it?
That was really nice. I like that movie a lot.
That's good.
Yeah, and it, like, you know what's interesting? I'm getting older now, and I was thinking about, like, as I was...
There's recent evidence.
And, like, as you get older, you change, right? Like, but, like, what was nice about watching this movie again is, like, it felt a little bit like when I was a kid and I would watch these movies again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I still have that part in me.
Yeah.
And that felt really nice.
That is great.
That's cool.
So it was a nice birthday. Aww. I had a good time. Then I was forced to go to my parents, and I still had a good time.
Right. And you remember the other things about being a child.
Yes.
Yeah. So my thing is, yet again, going to the Serious Play Conference in Rochester, New York in August. Ellen's going to be there, too.
Let's go.
Yay.
We're going to have our own sleepover, hopefully, maybe. That'd be fun.
Yeah, we'll get to find an Airbnb. It'll be fun.
Yeah, we got to figure that out. But if you are going, if you are going to know anything about Rochester, New York, and want to give us some tips on where to eat and what to do if we have some time around the conference, let me know, because I have been to New York State and upstate New York. I've not been as far west as Rochester, I don't think. Mm. So, DM us in the Discord.
Just all the best sandwich places.
Yeah.
I like food in general and specific, so anything. Ellen, you got a new gig.
Well, yeah. So I've been, I recently started a company with a couple of business partners. I would categorize myself as like junior partner. But yeah, four of us started a thing. It's called Engagency. We'll put the link in the show notes. And it's been a real adventure. I've been learning a ton, which was the goal, right? So starting an entire business from scratch is super risky. Now it seems like a super risky time to start a new business. But everything seems risky. So if everything seems risky, why not do it?
True.
If you can swing it now, you know.
Then you got it. Yeah. That's
exactly. Well, and so, you know, our senior partners are, you know, everyone's really experienced with, you know, senior professionals, and the two senior partners, this is, you know, they started their own business like 2009, ramped it up, sold it, and now we're doing it again.
Okay.
But different.
Wow.
So they're really experienced and they're really well connected. And so it's like, okay, these guys are great and they continue to be great. And I'm learning a ton of stuff from them. So cool. It's been really, really busy, but like it's all, you know, it's kind of cool to be at the end of the day being like, wow, my brain is tired. I literally can't do any more work, but I know I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning and be excited to start it again.
Oh,
that
just
happens day in and day out. Yeah. That's really, really cool.
That's really good.
It's really fun. So that's been pretty nice. And I will also say in the other things, Eric, my husband, has been doing lots of music stuff.
Cool.
He started a group that plays New Orleans street jazz. Mm-hmm. And the name of this group is called Tater Tot Gumbo.
Oh,
that's funny. That's good. All right, Lydia, I've got my shovel.
Yep.
And I've got my other gardening tools.
Yeah.
I'm afraid, Steve, we're going to need one more metaphor out of you.
Okay.
Gloves.
Gloves. I've got gloves.
Cool. Yeah. Gardening gloves.
Thank you, Ellen.
Good assist.
All right, Lydia, explain yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I'm talking about composting. This is a word that I use a lot. It's an idea I use a lot. Specifically, it comes from a chapter named Composting. It is 2 pages long within the book Writing Down the Bones, Freeing the Writer Within by Natalie Goldberg. I received this book when I was, I think, on my 15th birthday, and it's probably the book I've reread the most.
Wow.
It's just, but I don't really read books either.
Yeah.
But I love this book. It talks a lot about writing specifically, but I find it a touchstone creatively. And because it is such a short chapter, I'm going to read a little bit of that chapter just to kind of go into it. So, segments of 14 and 15 of the book, Composting. It takes a while for our experience to sift through our consciousness. For instance, it is hard to write about being in love in the midst of a mad love affair. We have no perspective. All we can say is, I'm madly in love, over and over again. It's also so hard to write about a city we just moved to. It's not yet in our body. Our senses by themselves are dumb. They take in experience, but they need the richness of sifting for a while through our consciousness and through our whole bodies. I call this composting. Our bodies are garbage heaps. We collect experience, and from the decomposition of the thrown out eggshells, spinach leaves, coffee grinds, and old steak bones of our minds come nitrogen, heat, and very fertile soil. Out of this fertile soil blooms our poems and stories, but this does not come all at once. It takes time. Continue to turn over and over the organic details of your life until some of them fall through the garbage of discursive thought to the solid ground of black soil. If we continue to work with this raw matter, it will draw us deeper and deeper into ourselves, but not in a neurotic way. We will begin to see the rich garden we have inside of us and use this for our writing. Often I will stab many times at something I want to say. For instance, you can look at my notebooks from August through December 1983 and see that I attempted several times a month to write about my father dying. I was exploring and composting the material. Then suddenly, and I can't say how, in December, I sat transfixed at the Croissant Express in Minneapolis, and a long poem about that subject poured out of me. All the disparate things I had to say were suddenly fused with energy and unity, a bright red tulip shot out of the compost. So I will, when talking to my peers and my coworkers, use words a lot like composting, marinating, sifting, stewing, cogitating on an idea, on a thought, on a thing that I'm working on, a document. And it very much fundamentally comes from this. I think this is the chapter that I refer to the most. Mm-hmm. There's that need that we have to step back from our work and let it breathe in order to see it better, because there gets a point where we've worked on something so much we can't actually look at it anymore. Like, physically it's painful, but also like we actually can't see our own work.
Yeah.
I've also been thinking about it in a lot lately with the pressure, the immense pressure to follow up with a new project on game dev teams so quickly after success. And I mean, hopefully less over time, but there is a shame when the next project doesn't work out. And I've been very glad to hear when teams are honest that they tried something and then they scrapped it because it wasn't going anywhere and they went in a new direction. But especially with games that take forever, they're expensive. There is a lot of excitement and hype to just kind of go. it's really, really hard, even if the project still works, it's hard just day to day to build in and justify the time to let things sit.
Yeah.
And to get fresh eyes on the problem when, I mean, if you're like my team, you're working in sprints. You're sprinting by definition.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, at the end of the game, like, you've worked on it for so long that it's difficult to, like, really celebrate the fact that you made a game, you made something.
Yeah.
Whether you're happy with it or not.
Yeah, I mean, you two asked me if I was, how I felt about Category Quest releasing finally, and I was like, I don't know.
Yay.
I mean, yeah, it's like, is it good? I have no clue. Mm. And I really like this chapter also because it speaks to, there's definitely, like, you can feel how you want, whether it's like anxiety or resignation or frustration, but the idea of, like, nothing you make is creative. It's all just like your everything, but the need to live life and the need to consume media and information so you can add to that pile, and then follow, mm-hmm. being able to follow curiosity and rabbit holes because you can trust that they will enrich you both in the moment in terms of, like, oh, this gives me dopamine, but also that they might even come in handy someday.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this because it is such a center point to my creative process, if I dare call it that. I don't even know. I don't think of myself as an artist or anything, but as a creative person or a person who makes stuff and who absorbs so many things and is so interested in so many things, mm-hmm. it feels so obvious, but so, yeah. It just seems like a shame it doesn't have or it's not more obvious.
More emphasis?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. I agree. Like, I oftentimes, I didn't realize how much our topics are paired.
I know, I saw yours after I put in my notes before I drove, and I was like, this is perfect!
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely feel like I oftentimes have a hard time stepping away from a thing and being able to come back to it and look at it as a whole. Oftentimes, I'll just keep thinking about it. And that makes it difficult to, yeah, like you said earlier, it makes it difficult to actually see the whole piece.
And I think that's very much what Natalie Goldberg is also saying. Like, she advocates for, you know, this isn't an excuse to, I think she says, sit back and eat bonbons. You still have to turn the compost. You have to turn it in order for this process to happen.
Yeah.
I don't need an excuse for bonbons.
Yeah, that's fair. You can eat bonbons while you're turning the compost, I suppose.
We're all adults.
We have adult money.
What's a bonbon?
It's like the little chocolate with the ganache on the inside. It's like a truffle.
Okay, what's a ganache?
A ganache is like, imagine frosting, but a bit thicker, like a bit denser.
Okay.
And so you make it, and you can either coat cakes or fill cakes.
It's a cookie.
No.
No.
No, it's more of like a thick mousse.
All right, I'll look this up later.
It's delicious, but
it's so good.
Yes.
I just heard, like, so bonbons be like the shorthand for, like, lazy eating.
Oh,
I feel like it's a metaphor, but I never thought to think, what actually is one?
Have you ever had a Lindor truffle?
I think I'll just have to ask questions about that, so we should probably move on. Okay.
So, like, I'm talking a bit about, like, you know, the ability to step away and be able to kind of reset the eyeballs, reset the brain, but you're also talking very specifically about what she talks about in the part of the chapter I didn't read.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you have to keep turning the compost, you have to keep working at it, you have to keep practicing your, in this case, writing.
Yes.
Because the act of doing that gets you closer to finally having it click.
Yeah.
Finally having something rich enough and broken down enough. And I think that's what it really is. It's like that the thing that you need to, it needs to lead you to, gets there.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, like, that's hard and frustrating. I mean, that's a reason she calls it a practice. But it's very different way of going into that process with the idea of, this isn't working and it sucks, versus I'm prototyping something, you know, like, but mechanically I think the processes are very similar, but one of them is such a better outcome and it feels more productive in the act, as opposed to just, why is this suck?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's you can compare this process of sort of creative inputs and outputs to how we define experience in technical fields, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a metaphor that works pretty well across. I think I have a little difficulty with it being like this. It's just, at least in the passage here, it's described as a must, like this has to happen before the click.
Forgive me if I'm speaking for you, Lydia, but I don't think that's what this is. I don't think this is saying that this is the only way to do it. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's being like direct, but I think that, like, this is an avenue and oftentimes can help you get out of your own head
It is not saying that it is a prerequisite. It is more of an explanation of why it takes so long to get to the thing sometimes, where it's like you have such... Mm-hmm. I think the idea is like your experiences are so rich, and that richness can't always directly go into art. It sometimes takes time to process and combine with other things until it gets to the point where you are able to make something of it that you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, that last passage in the chapter, this understanding also helps us to accept someone else's success to not be too greedy. It is simply that person's time. Ours will come in this lifetime or the next, no matter, continue to practice. The idea that, like, just because your compost pile, the particular stuff that is in your pile is taking longer to break down, does not invalidate the nutrients that are within it.
Sure.
It just is like that person's compost is super hot. The right combo of things made something beautiful happen. Mm-hmm. Their tulip grew faster. It doesn't mean yours is broken.
Yeah.
I will also mention that she speaks specifically from a practicing Buddhist perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Throughout the book, she frequently refers to her meditation teacher, Katagiri Roshi, who's mentioned in the chapter as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is important context for this. But I think really it is that sense of what I love about it is that it's not talent that makes the thing great. Talent isn't the only thing. Mm-hmm. Your experiences are the nutrients. Your practice is the tilling. This makes it feel less of an all or nothing game. It makes it feel more of a process as opposed to a lack of eureka.
Yeah, I mean, there's also times when I feel like I should be working on this thing harder.
Yeah.
And I need to keep pushing myself. And then, you know, I keep pushing myself and I don't get anywhere. And that's frustrating. And then you just keep, it's like a cycle, downward spiral.
Yeah, and it's like there's that very personal, it's still hard to find the balance between like hitting your head against the wall and genuinely practicing and working on a problem.
Yeah.
And I think like that's mentioned later in the book many times because it's hard. But like this is an example of it too. Yeah. It's a very, I don't know, I very much like this and I wonder if this is applicable outside of design or outside of writing.
I mean, it reads as very universal. Mm. And I think that's why I have maybe trouble attaching to it because it does feel like, yeah, there's something about inevitability that's implied here, which I don't think it means to say.
Okay.
But I don't think it's limited to you know the author's subject, you know, as a creative writer.
Yeah.
I think it can be applied elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that's its strength, but also perhaps I don't know, I think it could be more specific in its description. But because it's so broad and that's the value of it. I can see could also be very like Rorschach testy a little.
Sure.
Mm.
If that makes any sense. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm getting a lot of stuff out of it that I don't know that is not exactly in the page.
Well, like a lot of things, that's the process of your creative generation. Yeah. So, like if that's what it got you, then good, you know, it did its job.
I mean, this is very early in the book where a lot of it at the beginning is learning to believe and trust that you can be a writer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That it is actually a feasible thing.
Yeah.
And as you go through, you learn more about the practice of it and the hard work and the ways that we fool ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so those might actually become a lot more interesting to you, those later chapters. Mm-hmm. I love this book. The chapters range from being like one page, two page like this one to multiple pages. So it's a very good book to pick up, put down.
Cool.
I'd be curious if you want to read it. Shrugs.
Ellen, do you have any thoughts?
I have heard Lydia talk about composting many times.
Okay.
And I always liked it. Who knows, you know, why. I guess I like worms. They're cool and worms like compost. So like
great assist. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever gets you on board.
I guess like what was the context that I was talking to you about composting?
Well, I mean, we talked about it several times because like when you've been working on design problems together, when you and I worked for the same company on the same kind of project, like we would work through design problems and we'd, you know, do a working session and then we'd take a break for a couple of days. And one of the things that I think you said multiple times was, this is great. We made some progress and now I can let those ideas compost in my head for a little bit. That always made sense to me. I think for me, I don't know if the term composting is one that I've used in the past, but it's definitely the idea of like, it needs to like ferment. It needs to sit in there and then you need to check on it. And some ideas need that and some ideas don't.
Yeah.
And I would say even some ideas need that from one person or multiple people. So like, for example, just to talk about composting and the creative act of figuring out what we're going to sell as a new company. So the business partners and I were talking all the time. but we have a couple of sessions each week dedicated to, you know, like working on the business. And we came together and we pulled together some work from our existing client base, or like people that we already knew from our existing network, I should say.
Yeah.
But we don't want that to only be the thing. Like, we want to have something that's ours that we made that we bring to the world. And so we've been talking about what we want to do. And it's taking a while because we only have so many hours every week to do it.
Right.
But I'm glad we're taking the time instead of rushing it, because just over the last couple of weeks, things have really started to click. So it's like the compost has started to break down now, where some of those nutrients are like accessible. We can grow some plants.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a handy metaphor for something I think a lot of people understand but can't express.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real good, it's like, it's a way to describe something that like you probably sort of know.
Yeah.
But having a way to describe it, I think, lets you understand it better.
It helps you talk about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd be worried about like fully extending the metaphor to all, because then, then you start shaping the idea to fit the metaphor.
Then you start talking about shovels.
Right. But I'm thinking like the example in here, but the poet talks about like suddenly this thing came out of her and she attributes that to like having the time for the pieces to compost so that she would have that.
Yeah.
But you could easily describe that experience as like, I took a break and then eureka.
Mm-hmm.
You could describe it to a different metaphor. But what I like about this is that it's just a way to wrap around something that you, like a frustration, like you were saying, working on the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, she specifically said she tried several times a month from August to December.
Yeah.
So this was a thing that she had been trying to do for months.
Yeah.
Right. But it speaks to the idea that we talk about a lot on the show, which is just like having different influences. Mm-hmm. And like, it's, you know, if you just focus on one thing, you may be really good at that one thing, but like it's in service of some expression you want to make. And so that it alone isn't going to get you there. You need other things, and other things that you don't even realize you need. And you may never even be able to recognize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is just, you know, we describe things like that. And this is sort of almost a similar thought.
Yeah.
Just wrapped in a different, you know, metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does it look like to put this idea into practice?
Well, for me or for in general?
Well, for you.
For me, a couple things. I like to collect ideas. That one of the things I really like about it is the idea that, I guess I'm a bit of a pack rat mentally, is that nothing was potentially wasted. You know, it's, if it's interesting and worth learning, it's not wasted time. It could come in handy someday, or it could connect with something in the future. And so that gives a little bit of a legitimacy to it, which makes me feel a little bit better about it. I talk a lot about it when I talk about working with positive impact games, where it's like, okay, you do all the research on what you're trying to do, especially if you're like me and I don't know what I'm supposed to be making the game about, most things. Mm. I have lots of material and I don't know what to do with it. And so trying to start working through it and trying to draw connections, analogies, start to connect it to other things, or, you know, see what I still remember from a few days as I'm working, sifting through it. That is another type of composting for me, because then that kind of brings it down to its core stuff.
Yeah.
And it helps slough away a lot of the like things that someone, an expert might find interesting, but a novice or someone just learning it can't anchor onto. What are the things that you can anchor onto? What are the core bits?
Oh.
And then I will have creative ideas or things I think would be a good idea, but now is not the time. I don't have the skill set. I don't have the time. I don't have enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll keep that in my back pocket and every so often bring it back out and see if it fits, or see if now is a good time, or if this makes sense for this, for a scenario, or if I can work a little bit more on it.
Sure.
So it's kind of a mixture of like a compost bin, kind of a mixture of like one of those boxes where you put bones in where the bugs eat all the flesh off of it and then you get the bones off of it. Kind of like a knick-knack shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Very much mixed metaphor, but that's kind of how experiences and things get composted in my mind in a lot of ways. I mean, it's very, very much, for me personally, is how my brain works, which is partly why I love it. Your results may vary, but that is how I draw connections to things, and also how I maintain a curiosity of so many different interests, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it in the pile, let it sit for a bit.
I guess the one thing where it does kind of make me connect to game dev are also the stories where it's like, we had this idea for a game 10 years ago, and there was no way we could have made it.
Mm.
And now it finally, we were able to make this game for whatever reason.
That's an interesting insight. And I think that relates also to the example in the excerpt about like the, what keeps you from making the thing is that you have a specific goal for the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's where it can be like, I mean, assessing what you need to get there is the challenge. And I think this is, offers you a, an explanation as to why just trying to meet the minimum that you need to do the thing isn't actually going to produce the result you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that there are other things that are maybe sort of unknowable, perhaps, which is not an actionable piece of information, but it's, it helps you understand and reflect in, I think, a really productive way, probably.
I think that is the core to the difference of, is composting banging on it, or is composting leaving it alone for that situation? Because it's like, if you're able to work on it and learn something new about the problem space that's keeping you from the goal, then that is productive.
Yeah.
If you're just banging on it and you're not learning anything new and you're getting frustrated and it's just, you see the problem even less, that's not productive.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's what the difference is between your practice, your mixing of the compost, and your eating of bonbons.
Sure, sure, sure. And then I guess the alternate path towards productivity would be stepping outside of the goal you have, analyzing what is possible, what is available to you, and then producing from there, rather than either waiting or insisting upon the things you thought you need or the things that would eventually appear after enough churn.
Yeah.
And but that's not always practical or possible.
That's
so
true.
I think this may not apply in situations where your goal is to use what you have and produce something from it.
Yeah.
It makes a lot more sense when you have a really strong seed of what it should be.
Yeah.
And can't get there yet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's also, I think, speaks to the, like, what does this game want to be?
Yeah.
If you are trying to get a red tulip and you step back and you realize that the only thing that this compost, like, this compost really wants to grow into a tree,
mm-hmm.
that's a problem, depending on your publishing and your schedule and what, I mean, your own goals, but also what you're beholden to make.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the way that you...
There's practical production and capitalist concerns that are sort of outside the scope of any of these notions, right? It's like, as an artist, are you willing to make something else? And and maybe you are and maybe you aren't, and that's really just up to you.
But it's still that point of reflection of what is here.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As you describe your process, I realized that what I was talking about doesn't quite mesh, at least specifically what you were talking about, in that taking a step away from a thing isn't necessarily the work that this passage is describing. It can be stepping back and looking at it as a whole.
Yeah.
And maybe stepping back and recognizing what other things you can bring to this thing to make it better.
Yeah.
Versus just trying to solve a problem.
I will say that for me personally, I have to completely disengage in order to be able to do that.
Okay.
For a bit.
Okay.
But that's just, like, again, how my brain works. Some people can switch into that analysis lens. I can't.
Okay.
So for me, I have to disengage fully in order to come back with fresh eyes and go, okay, I'm not the writer. I'm an analyzer. What is here?
Right. Yeah, but that makes it more clear to me that it's not necessarily just, like, literally just taking a break.
No. No, she very clearly, like, she talks about how she loves when students do this, when they're, like, writing things that aren't necessarily good, but they're exploring their minds for material.
Yeah.
Because then it's like they're not just going to go with what she calls hot writing, but they're in the process of writing. Mm-hmm. They're actively engaging with the process of thinking and doing and creating. Oh. And that's the more important thing to learn.
And so it sounds like the act of, like, paper prototyping something and recognizing that it doesn't necessarily work, but, like, just doing it because, like, it was an idea you had in your head is part of this process.
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And what qualifies as tilling and churning is different for every, you know, sometimes it could be thought experiments, sometimes it would be actual producing proper prototypes. Different scales can be as effective or ineffective.
Yeah.
When we talked to Freya a couple weeks ago, she's, and I asked her, like, how do you get to the point between I have problem and I'm going to make an entirely new tool?
Mm-hmm.
She says, I'm going to mess around and see what I can do. And then that informs, like, if she makes the tool for herself or if she makes it a standalone tool.
Mm-hmm.
That process she described very much in line with this, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the game development is just so complicated and multidisciplinary and personal to every person who engages in it,
right,
either through their discipline or through their process, that it's a lot harder to say what practice looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so it looks different in each field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think there's aspects of this that you can definitely add to whatever your practice is.
I have some background on Croissant Express, if you'd like.
Yes, please. I was curious, actually.
So Croissant Express is a diner, was a diner, that was in on the corner of the building where the Uptown Theater, in the Uptown neighborhood of Minneapolis, on, wouldn't you know it, Hennepin Avenue.
Hey!
Right now. So a little bit of kismet.
That's fun.
That's awesome. I believe there's a chapter named Elkton, Minnesota in this book as well.
Dang. Well, Minnesotans, y'all should definitely check this book out, I guess.
Hey, Ellen.
Hey, hey.
As a newly professional Patreon follower of Nice Games Club, what would you say is the benefit of throwing us money every so often?
Okay, well, so there are benefits, right? So it's ad-free. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
And I think you can listen on the Patreon app, but the fun thing is I actually have been listening on Spotify because Patreon has a way that you can, like, connect the two. So my default audio experience app with all the podcasts and all the playlists and all the bleep sound tracks that I've collected over the years also has Nice Games Club, which is not a sleep sounds track. I do not listen to Nice Games Club to fall asleep.
You mean you can't fall asleep to my sultry tones?
Give me some ASMR or something where you're talking about cats. I don't know.
Challenge accepted. Maybe some bonus content we could put on Patreon.
There you go. Some ASMR where you're just reading game dialogue. Like,
oh, yeah, I do that.
That would actually be kind of fun.
Well, you say you connect that to Spotify, but we give you you get a custom RSS feed, whatever podcast app. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You
can
add that. Oh, yeah, not okay, everybody cool, knows great. When they sign up for these things. That feels like, yeah. Well, how do I get it in my current listening, you know, workflow? No problem.
So you get all connected. You get all that ad free.
I get all that ad free whenever I want it. And I think, you know, the main thing for me, there's tons of bonus content. I was there for a lot of it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. And she still became a patron. That's how That's how valuable it is.
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, the most valuable thing is just like supporting the show, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know what it takes to keep the show going, both monetarily, but also just the amount of time that you guys are putting in on a regular basis. It feels good to be able to throw you guys some cash. We actually recently went through a subscription pruning exercise. And Nice Games Club stayed on the list.
Ah, we made the cuts!
Of things that stayed.
I was worried.
Yeah. Yep, nice. So if you like Ellen and you want to be as cool as Ellen, buy a unit of currency closer in proximity to her coolness.
Yes.
You should go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub and give us some money. Any amount is appreciated.
All right, Steven, I hear you have a topic that's basically the same topic again.
You know, it is very similar.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know what composting is when I put down over designing. Right.
Excuses,
as my
excuses.
Topic. Okay.
But
well.
I can't tell you how excited I am when I saw it. I was like, this is kind of the, okay, now what do we do? Like, yeah. this is mm-hmm. a great thing because it is so easy to over design.
Yes, yeah. Right. Okay. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I tend to have a habit of over designing things. And it's a problem that I want to workshop here on air, I guess.
Yeah.
So what is over designing? It's when you basically you add too much stuff to a thing. At least how I would describe it is you add too much stuff to a thing to solve a bunch of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got a whole mishmash of several different things and it doesn't feel like a cohesive whole.
It's the duct tape method.
Yeah. Oh, my brother. This is an aside.
Ooh.
But my brother has had a backpack for like 15 years and all he does is duct tape it to fix it. It's got holes. What the other day, his tablet pen fell out of the backpack, and I'm so upset. He will not get a new backpack.
Truly has a backpack of Theseus. Oh, my gosh.
Maybe it's what connects him to his childhood.
Oh.
I hear that's a healthy thing.
Curse you, Mark.
You're hanging on a wall or something.
Yeah, peace. Ooh,
that's
I know
yeah.
how to make. Yeah. I know how to make museum labels. I do a mean miter on a foam core. So
okay. So what I'm saying,
let's shadow box that thing.
What I'm saying is we should stage an intervention,
yes.
Charles. Okay.
Yes.
We'll work.
A baggervention.
Yeah. We'll maybe do a nice thinking about that in a future episode or something. But
does he listen to this?
No. He will pull facts from it in the future if he's on the show. Mm. Anyways, over designing, you put too much stuff in the thing. It doesn't feel like a cohesive whole. I am guilty of this a lot. And I oftentimes fall into this trap because I just think about a thing for too long.
Yeah.
And I don't like do anything about it. And part of the reason why I do this is because I like to think about stuff when I'm falling asleep because it helps me fall asleep. And so I just like come back to it. I'm like, oh, where did I leave off on this thing? Oh, I was here. Okay. So I'll think about this thing and then I'll, you know, think about it. And then like 15, 30 minutes later, I'm asleep. So I don't actually fully think about it.
Yeah.
I had to re-remember what I thought about it.
That's very complicated.
And as you're thinking about it, like, just to calm your mind, you know you're not going to retain it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just like, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so, like, you'll just come back to it, and it feels... It's bad. So what oftentimes happens when you over-design something, and it's kind of difficult to know when you've over-designed a thing, which is because you're in it. But oftentimes what happens is there's like too many systems, too many mechanics. There's too much content. It's too complex. It's difficult to explain to people what the thing is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very good sign of when you know you've over-designed something is you can't explain it to someone else.
Yeah.
It's not very elegant. Yeah. I think elegance is a little overrated, but it is valuable because people will understand it right away.
Yeah.
Something is elegant.
Elegance is sort of easy to demonstrate the success of.
Yeah.
But that also can fool you into thinking that like everything needs to be simpler and simpler.
Right.
You know, because sometimes depth and challenge of understanding is the better choice.
Yeah, I love the word elegant, but because of a very personal thing. So my grandfather was a physicist, and he used to say that things would have an elegant solution. And fundamentally, like when you're talking about over-designing, the reason you're adding all the stuff is you're solving problems, and you're adding stuff that's not actually solving the problem.
Yeah.
What you need is an elegant solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily mean the product is elegant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're faced very often with a fork in the road. Like, here's a problem I need to solve. Or I could just, like, undo the last three things I did, and then the problem would be gone. I would just have to rebuild those things in a way that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And almost never do we choose that choice, because it's a lot harder.
It's a lot harder.
And it invalidates solutions we've already applied, and it's the unknown path. We don't know if we're going to be able to re-implement that in a way that doesn't re-cause the problem.
Yeah.
Better just fix the problem.
Yeah. And you have... Just add another mechanic. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Add more stuff.
So I think if you like look at some games, you can recognize that like they put a lot of stuff in here because it solved another problem, or it solved an issue that like you can't necessarily see because there's just too much stuff in the game. I can't think of any examples right now where that comes into actually Fingence is a little bit of that.
I find when currency conversion or material conversion and processing in games goes crazy, or when there are mechanics that on the surface seem like they should be optional, like, oh, I'm interested in this thing, I could do this, and they end up being mandatory because in order to do the things you want to do, you have to do those other things to even have the time or the space to do those.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to engage with it in order to engage with the part of the game you want to.
Yeah.
That, to me, is a big sign.
Yeah.
I have a recent, very recent example from Mario Kart World.
Oh.
Which is great. Top tier Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing beats 64, but, you know, it's pretty good. But the big new feature of that is it's a big open world. All the courses you can drive from one to the other.
Yes.
And it has this open world in which you can engage with that.
Yeah.
But, of course, you still need to have the normal races. So it has two principal modes. One is the standard Grand Prix mode, four courses. And the other one is the new Knockout Tour mode.
Yeah.
Where it's just one race, but at every checkpoint, you know, the last four get eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And the full course is four courses long.
Yeah.
And the driving between them is part of the race.
Yeah, yeah.
That's brilliant. Such a cool idea.
Yeah, it's cool.
But what ended up happening is the Grand Prix mode, the standard just race four tracks in a kart, that also goes from track to track.
Yeah.
And in a way that is kind of confusing.
Yeah, it is.
And basically because they presumably built this game around the open world mechanic, and I can't say this is exactly the order in which things happened, but I imagine Knockout Tour was the thing they designed all this for.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then when they wanted to do the normal system, they ended up kind of doing a kludge where it's just Knockout Tour, but you pause between each races.
Yeah.
And that is essentially to preserve, because many people will be playing that's the default mode.
Right.
But this game is open world, so you have to know that it's different.
Yeah.
And so that's to solve that problem of not letting players forget the unique properties of the game.
Yeah.
When I would suggest the answer would actually be just to pull back on that and maybe even make Knockout Tour the main mode.
Yeah.
Or maybe even not include Grand Prix mode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but instead, they put it in there in a way that feels like half something else.
Sure, yeah.
And then the first race, you do three laps, and the next race, you drive there and do one lap. It just doesn't feel like the thing,
doesn't
even
match,
though it technically is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a result of, it feels messy. It actually, there's a part of it that feels under-designed, but I can tell it's the result of many, many, many choices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, if they made fewer choices, they probably could have had something a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, they could have just done traditional Grand Prix and just race around the track.
Right. Nights. Instead of solving the problem, they could have just stepped one step back.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they would still have the earlier problem.
Yeah.
But then I think there were other ways to do it. It's just a challenge, but they didn't go that way. They went into the...
They picked an option.
They just kept going until it was all piled on and finished.
Yeah. That's a good example. I like it. Yeah. So those examples like that in other games that... Actually, listeners, if you have any examples, let us know in nicegames.club.
Yeah, for sure.
/ Discord. I would like to hear it. Or nicegames.club / feedback. That's option two. And tell me why I'm wrong about something.
Tell him why he's right. I mean, my example specifically from Graveyard Keeper. I figured I should cite my source.
Oh, got it. Oh, okay.
Because I forgot to mention the game.
Like, okay. So, I think in the past, what I've done to prevent over-designing is I tell people about the thing.
Yeah.
Because you need somebody to... check yourself.
Right.
You can't just do it yourself.
Yeah.
Because then you'll be like, yeah, I'm sure I'm smart and I know all these things. And you're not as smart as you think you are. A lot of the time, I'm telling myself this. I'm not telling y'all, the listener, that you're probably as smart as you think you are. I think it's important to talk to people about it, show people your ideas in a document, help writing it down, frankly, is an aspect of this too. Mm-hmm. Because like, if you start writing it down, you're like, oh, this is actually really difficult to write it down. Then you know you have... some of the effort you need to put into this idea, this concept, needs to be put into explaining it to people, expressing it to yourself. So future 6 months later, you can come back to this and know what it is you were trying to come up with. Also, I think like prototypes, very valuable. Mm-hmm. Playtesting, of course.
Critical.
I found that prototyping has been very helpful. Playtesting your games, it's very important. We talk about that on the show all the time. Mm-hmm. Say it more, in fact. Basically, you just need to get some outside feedback, because otherwise... You're the only one telling yourself that you should do this thing. You're the only one coming up with solutions. And sometimes you'll be in your head too much.
Yeah.
And that's why our topics are so aligned, is because like you do need to sometimes take a step back and recognize what it is that you've been doing. And sometimes it could be helpful to have somebody else look at what you're doing, so they could tell you what they like and don't like about it. And you can kind of get a better understanding of what does work.
Yeah. Especially because other people will poke at your problem and you end up in the vein of like the fork in the road. They'll find a fork that is off to the side that maybe you would have found five decisions down, but they can pull in right away.
Right.
And that might, like, one, that saves you time, but two, that might end up leading actually to a solution because you're thinking about it in a different way.
Yeah,
I think this is a good opportunity to bring up design pillars.
Yes.
Because one of the things that, like, the way I design anything is I'm building it out, but it's always one thing.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how many component parts, I always imagine it as one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how big a mental leap that is, but sometimes you can get into the situation where you're thinking of it as very distinct systems that have their own advantages and interactions. But if you imagine everything interacting with everything else, one, that makes you think more about their relationships, but also it actually does, and this is actually something that is like up to you as a designer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think it actually can change how you do. But like, because I always think of these things as connected, that means I actually have to design them in a way that connects them. That makes it very easy to say no to things.
Yes.
Now, that is to a designer's taste, right? You might find that that is restricting on you. And that's, I think, a fair exception to this kind of style. But I think I would like to think it lets you make things complex without being needlessly complicated.
Yeah.
As long as you are sticking to design pillars. Like,
sure.
Does this serve the thing this game needs to be? The one thing or the three things, the big things?
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't, then why doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is it because the thing that got me here was a problem? Because then I should take one step back.
Yeah.
Is it because the three ideas I have don't match and then maybe I should let it sit or do more thinking about how it's going to be?
Yeah.
Or maybe I work on a different problem, which will then engender a solution that is more obviously able to connect to the problem.
Yeah.
Because I haven't built the part of it that will provide the solution.
Well, I think even if you're not emotionally ready to cut things whole cloth from that and have it be a stark, is this in service or is this not? It is a way to get a more realistic perspective of the priority in how much it is serving. Because then you can more reasonably see, is this an integral part of the thing, or was this a solution to a problem from an integral part of the thing?
Right.
But also then you have a more reasonable sense of, if push comes to shove, can I slough this off? Mm. Or is this small, but it's still important? I mean, I think about this a lot with designing games, but also when it comes to content. Is this detail, is this story, is this informational piece when it comes to writing, working with educational material or therapy material, how vital is this in service to the thing? Because it's very easy to get to the point where it's like everything is important and therefore nothing is important.
Yeah.
Even if you can't cut anything right away, getting that kind of gradation can be so helpful in actually then finding a solution to the problem.
Yeah. That's an aspect of it I didn't really think about. But like, yeah, if everything feels like priority and it's because you're the only one looking at it, I'm really talking about myself when I say
that. Oh, 100%.
Well, everyone, certainly many people listening are nodding along that me too.
Absolutely, for sure.
Okay, so question for you, Steven.
Yes.
So I think, because I don't know if you feel this way about it, but what I'm sort of hearing and the way I'm sort of interpreting this notion is that over-designing is not a production problem. It's not a matter of like wasting time or overthinking, because I think a way to prevent over-designing is in fact to overthink. Is to work harder and do more.
Ah.
Now, we talk a lot about the connection between like the sort of scope of projects and getting out of control on a design side, having a lot of relation to them getting out of control on the production side. But I think this is an area where they are kind of at odds.
Yeah.
Where like actually it takes a lot of work to get around this.
Mm.
Whereas it's actually quite easy and fast, in fact, to just
add a new
compile
thing.
On things, solve the quickest thing.
Yeah,
I don't know if you feel that way about it, but I would almost recommend, in contravention to the normal way we talk about production topics on this show, that actually a solution is to really drill down and put a lot of time into this thinking.
That's fascinating. I think that it sometimes does require like focus. You have to like actually focus on the thing you're trying to figure out. And it kind of requires both. Because if you're focusing on it too much, okay, the way that over-designing oftentimes manifests into me is I will focus on this thing too hard.
Okay.
And I will not be able to see the big picture. I'll be like, I need
a Dale to say, what is this doing for you? And that is the role of production in this scenario.
Right. Yeah. I will oftentimes be like, I need to fix this problem and not recognize that I need to fix this problem in a way that fits with the whole.
Sure. You need more of a holistic way of solving your problems.
Ever-present context.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of like... a lot of energy.
It does. In order to be able to hold the idea that everything is connected and has variables that matter, that is hard.
Yeah.
But it is so important, as you said.
And so I think thinking about a thing too much sometimes leads to that problem and sometimes solves the problem. It's just ridiculous.
It's how you think too much.
Yeah.
Take that listener and do something with it.
For real.
That's so right. Like,
Yeah. Sometimes you really do need to think about the problem fully in a whole and think about how you got to this point, what you could do to, how you could solve it, options to solve it, and then pick an option based off of more thought and what makes sense for the game.
Yeah.
I've been trying. I feel like, oh God, I overthink all the time, and I have trouble following a design thought all the way to its conclusion. So I always worry I leave nooks and crannies of like problems that I never thought of that are big and scary.
Yeah.
So what I started doing, I think I mentioned this on the show before, I've started making flowcharts of like the decisions and why they're good and why they're bad until I get to a terminus where it's like, okay, I've hit the end and I know that this is not the right way to go. And then I'll start a new path. And so I have the spidery threads of trying to figure out the design. But then also that means that I can then go back and say, I have the notes personally where it's like, oh, I thought of this and it was a bad idea because, or it wouldn't work exactly because of this other thing that I need to value more.
Yeah, I need the discipline to be able to do that because that's part of my problem too.
Hard. I can show you, maybe I can show you some of the ones that I've been doing because this is a recent thing.
Yeah, I would appreciate that because I'm thinking about it. I also think about it in terms of like, strategy games, like I have a hard time with strategy games. And the reason I have a hard time with strategy games is I'll think about a thing and I'm like, okay, I got to do this thing on turn one. And then I'll be like, okay, so I should do this on turn two, do this on turn two, three, do it on turn four, whatever. By the time I get to turn six, I forgot what I was supposed to do on turn one.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much like I don't get people who can do chess because it seems like it's a lot of memorizing moves. Mm. But the thing is that when you actually hear people talking about like, why they're doing something, it is because they're talking about what the pawn's position is doing. Like they're saying, I can't do this because this thing is protected.
Yeah.
Or like, I need to do this so I can cover this other piece.
Yeah.
Whereas like, if you just look at it step by step, it's movements of pieces, and it has forms.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have, like, strategy take a lot of time. You can record yeah. those. And it's getting to the, like, why is this important to do right now in this moment? And that takes a lot more skill yes. than just, oh, this happens, therefore this needs to follow.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, in chess, like, you don't necessarily think about where anything goes. You think about the position.
Yes.
Right. Which is where everything is, right? You see the whole board.
Yes.
And, like, that's what makes it so, like, such a simple mechanic so endlessly complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's I think that's complicated. Like, anything you're designing from scratch that has many pieces
yeah.
is basically, and so many unknowables.
Yep.
All of that. Like, can you see the whole board? And how much of the board do you need to see to actually get anything done?
How important is it that you see the whole board or none of the board? Like, yeah. like the options that you, I mean, part of what's a lot is you are, when you're designing something, you're in control of all the variables. So you actually have to decide, like, how much is knowable? How yeah. much is there? How much do I include? Because how one variable can manifest will also change things fundamentally mm-hmm. all everywhere else. And that's also part of, like, what I have problems with is when one variable can make three different things possible depending yeah. on how we do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's where like flowcharts, like tooling yeah. comes in, right? So Ellen, I know that's something that you appreciate and investigate and experiment with is different like mm-hmm. Tooling. So can you help Steven out here?
Yes, please.
The problem being that you're not sure when to stop thinking.
Well, just like how do you track all that stuff?
Yeah, tracking it. I think honestly yeah. tracking my thinking would help. And it's difficult to do yeah. that when you're trying to.
I mean, is that like, is it just as simple as like just start keeping a notes app or something? Or is it like
yeah,
something
actually.
More robust like a Miro or something like that?
I think it depends on, I mean, I think Mural or Miro, which unfortunately do sound similar, yeah. can be really yeah. helpful.
I didn't know which one I was like, talking about, actually. So.
I know, right? They do the same thing, right? Uh-huh. Like, I mean, so pick one, I guess. Flip yeah. a coin. You know, neither one of them is sponsoring you, right? So
it's true.
I think we did get a, didn't we get a
we
little
did do
bit
one, yeah, we did an ad for one.
Miro?
I don't remember
yeah.
which one.
it was Miro.
Yeah.
Okay. It was Miro.
But you've had
yeah.
us try both, and I will say they are both pretty good.
Yeah.
They are both really good. Yeah, they just different. I think that can be helpful if you're like just trying to like throw stuff and then like, you know, sort through relationships if you need to have like a space where you can move things around.
Yeah.
What I have found really helpful is just opening up a blank Google Doc and just calling it Ellen's Messy Notes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or Ellen's Messy Workspace.
Yeah.
And then it's just blah, 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 blah. Another thing that I have found really useful recently, and that is like using some sort of voice recorder or whatever, just like talking through,
sure.
just talking.
Yes.
Like we're talking now, but even messier, right? Because I'm yeah. thinking through a problem. There's lots of fits and starts. Anyway, you run that through transcription and you put it in ChatGPT or whatever, and you say, summarize the good parts of this. Mm-hmm. And then you get, you know, notes that are read back to you, your own kind of notes read back to you. And that can be the start of your messy workspace yeah. document. So I think switching between big thinking work and time to do like execution work is yeah. actually like a really interesting process
yeah.
I've
yeah.
been reading a lot about. So time box yourself. Say, mm. I am not going to produce anything in these 2 hours. I'm not going to produce anything. Mm. I'm just going to think, and it's going to take various shapes. I'm going to write down things to help me think. But the goal of this is not even like I might come out of this and might have not really made any like measurable progress on the problem, but I'm going to set this aside specifically to turn my compost.
Yeah, I really like the recording yeah. one. When I was in college, our thesis advisor actually would record and send us the recording whenever we met to talk with him mm-hmm. because of the very specific thing where you talk through the problem and then you have a moment of clarity or you say like one phrase, like one sentence that kind of just makes it work. And then as soon as you walk out of the meeting, you forget everything you just said. Mm-hmm. Just that immediate like moment of understanding is so slippery at times. And so being able to, if you're at the point where you can't put it into typing because that's too structured, or you can't put it into a nice neat flow chart because it's all everywhere.
Yeah.
Having a way to record the very slippery
yeah.
Words can then mean you actually have, you've saved the anchor point or, you know, your paper prototype.
Right.
Or your
knowledge can exist physically. Right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it can be, you go back and talk to that advisor and you're like, I totally forgot. And then 30 seconds into talking again, you remember all of it.
Yeah.
And then you have to remember to like hold on to it as you leave mm-hmm. again.
Yes.
And yeah. So having those notes means that like you can process them and then live in that space, and then you don't have to keep it in your head all
the
time.
Yeah, it's because your brain is working so hard to solve the problem. It's not focusing on remembering what the solution.
You're right.
Because it's working so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why I like having the just the voice recorder. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like knowing that I can just like spew mind to something that doesn't need to make sense of it, and that I can come back to it and make more sense of it later, like, has been really, really great.
I'm the type of writer who edits as I go. So like I can't do that kind of like stream of consciousness stuff, because then I have to do a separate task of editing. But sure. I very much like talking to myself and then taking notes on that. Yeah. So kind of a different version of the same thing.
Oh, do you...
So like find your own way to get to the end result that Ellen is talking about,
do
right?
Do you do the thing where you write something and then you comment of like, this is bad, come for these reasons, come back to it.
I will go back to it immediately.
Oh, okay.
Like I'm quick enough that I can do that before I need to go to the next thing. If I don't, then it's a half a thought, and then it's not worth holding on to.
Oh, yeah.
I need to edit as I go.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a problem or not, but it works for me.
No, I mean, like everybody's brain is so different, it works. And it's the way that you get there.
Yeah.
Like, as we've clearly having four brains here, talking about the things that we do that are very similar and different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, I think it's interesting that this topic is we all kind of understand and agree on the problem and a lot of the approaches, then it just becomes the physical how.
Yeah.
That I think everyone has different approaches
Yeah. That's what I'm definitely recognizing. Like I oftentimes my solution is I also have a hard time like writing things down as I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I need to think about it and then try to explain it to myself later. And so I will do that. And that will help me fully understand what it is I'm doing.
Yeah.
Cause like sometimes, you have these thoughts.
Whereas like I can't paper prototype until I have an idea really solidly because I will start the paper prototype and then I'll be hit by the variables or by the paths I could take. And I'm like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Like that for me is a after this process step for me.
Yeah.
Just because like otherwise I freeze up and it's not useful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I take notes, my mind has to be occupied with something else or it will wander as I take notes.
Yeah.
And then the notes will be bad.
Yeah.
I kind of need to do two things. Yeah.
I get that for sure. Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, so
you could go full Pepe Silvia with a corkboard and stuff. That's also helpful.
Yeah. A lot of options. All of them require more work than I need to when I'm trying to go to
that
bed.
Wasn't you.
Oh,
you were
actually,
so.
Hold on. Lewis Carroll.
Uh-huh.
I think. Hold on. Please hold. I'm Googling something.
Okay.
While Lydia's Googling, I will say that it's interesting that your mind does this great thinking, like in this kind of like big thinking space.
Mm-hmm.
When you know you can't execute on it right then.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Because that to me is like, you're not going to give me permission to just think big on my own. Fine. I'm going to do it when you can't make me do anything with it.
Yeah. That is fascinating. Yeah. I do that. Huh?
Right. So you need valves with which to funnel that thinking into.
Yeah.
So that when you get caught in that thing, you have an option.
Yeah.
You're not trapped. You know,
Yeah. It's true.
So, Lewis Carroll, the author, he would frequently have ideas for his writing at night when he was trying to sleep. And it was too much of a hassle to constantly be like lighting a candle, getting a book. So what he created is he created a method so he could write in bed in the dark. Essentially, he made like a long cardboard rectangle with lots of squares. And then he made something akin to like, it kind of looks like Braille, but essentially it is it's points and lines along each little square corresponding to a letter of the alphabet. So that way, as he was falling asleep and he had ideas, he could write them down without like totally messing up his deal.
Wow.
So you could do this.
Yeah.
So
the modern version of that is the notes app on your phone.
Yeah. Yeah. I could just say it aloud.
Uh-huh. No, I love that. Just
That's cool.
Scraps of paper, you know,
that
you can access.
So this is like clearly a long-standing problem.
Well, that's good to know. I'm not alone. I mean, I knew that already, but it's good to know that it's historically an issue.
Well, listeners, I mean, there's just the four of us here, but that's got to be, you know, a very small array of avenues for which to explore this problem.
Yeah.
Or any other problem, really. Mm-hmm. So let's hear all the rest of your brains work.
Yeah.
On our Discord.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Let us know.
Everything is everything. Brains, brains, brains.
Brains, brains, brains. I think a lot about brains.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we got all the way to the end and didn't have a title, and now we do. Good job, Ellen. That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topic and a photo of Croissant Express, go to our website, nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes delivered to you 1 week early, just like Ellen gets. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, like Ellen is, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, would you believe it, it's the show's 400th episode.
Woo!
And Lydia has something special planned for it.
Yes, I do.
So? I'm so excited. And I'm going to get it a week early. Yeah, fools.
So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
There it is.
If you don't want to be cool like Ellen,
yeah,
therapy.
If Ellen specifically doesn't want to be as cool like Ellen, I mean.
Oh, me. Yeah, no. It's like I'm good. Yeah.
Okay, good.
I think the only reason you wouldn't want to be cool like Ellen is because you wouldn't feel you could handle it.
Yeah.
Right.
I imagine
the responsibility.
It's very powerful. Intense, actually. Yeah. Yeah. So I get it.
If you don't feel cool enough that you can sit in a basement and do a podcast.